Talk 560 KSFO.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
No deal is better than a bad deal.
I want to emphasize there are still some very important issues on the table.
Israel utterly rejects it. This is a very bad deal.
Beyond the sea.
It is Friday night with Michael Savage. What a wonderful world we're living in. A psychopath in the White House, a commie psychopath in the mayorship in New York. What could be better? Welcome to the program. The reason we're sticking to a sort of nautical theme tonight with a little Somewhere Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin is because we have the hero, John Kerry, as you remember, the hero on the Swift boat, who just gave Netanyahu a swift kick in the heart. Probably didn't make it to your local newspaper. I wouldn't expect the New York Daily News or the New York Post or, God forbid, the New York Times to report this. But it was reported today, it's at the top of Drudge all day in world news from the Daily Beast, that the Obama administration stabbed Israel in the back. That the sanctions on Iran were softened in June, even before the current round of nuclear talks in Geneva began. They've already yielded. So they've entered a game of chess, and they've already lost five rounds before they started. Did they lose, or did they do what Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran, wanted? What did I just say? Valerie Jarrett, his most trusted advisor, is Iranian? You betcha. You betcha. Now, of course, that wouldn't color her any more than someone born in Israel working in Chicago would color his views in any way. But apparently, Kerry is working overtime to not only stab Israel in the back, the knife's already in the back of Netanyahu, but to twist the knife now. So I'll ask you, the audience, I realize it's very difficult to ask you anything on a Friday night. It's always an uphill battle. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Do you care? Is this of any interest to you or what? I'll repeat the story. Daily Beast, long before a nuclear deal was in reach, the U.S. was lifting some of the financial pressure in Iran. A Daily Beast investigation reveals how the sanctions were softened. If we don't want to talk about that, what else is there to talk about? It's probably the biggest story of the week. As someone wrote, sounds like Obama decided to enter the Persian nuclear bazaar to haggle with the masters of negotiation. Does that interest you at all? Is that an interesting topic for talk radio? Or would you rather I talk about depression? Or how about a meatball recipe? This is a big story. I realize it didn't. All right, well, then we'll go on to hair lice. That's all. I'll do a story on hair lice. That might be of interest to the American political audience today. Is this what you get from drinking too much tea? Unless I say something about a tea party, you can't respond because, are you crazy? You realize how big this story is? Okay, here, I'll do a lice story then. More lenient school lice policies bug some parents. That's the benign headline. Did you hear what went on now? Parents are scratching their heads over less restrictive head lice policies that allow children with live bugs in their hair to return to the classroom. Do you know why they're doing that? And some school nurses are no longer sending home the dreaded lice note to other parents with kids in the classroom, alerting them to the possibility of lice in their own child's precious hair. Why? It's to prevent the children with lice in their hair from being embarrassed and to protect their privacy. I'm not making this up. We're living in the end days of insanity. America is in the final throes of psychosis under Obama. The policy shift is designed to help children not be embarrassed who have lice in their hair. So although it may result in the infection, the louse infection spreading to other children, that's not as important as the self-esteem of the lousy children. Did you hear what I just said? Lousy children? You know where the word lousy person comes from? It's people who have lice in their hair. Now, I'll remind those of you who are ignoramuses out there, which would probably be in the 98th percentile of America, that lice can transmit many serious illnesses, infections rather, including typhus. But since lice have now become somewhat prevalent as a result of unchecked immigration from the third world. We don't want to upset you, because you certainly would rather... Look, a good liberal would say, I'd rather my child come home with lice in her hair than embarrass an illegal alien. Now I'll tie that into the next story about illegal alien. Berkeley has banned the term illegal immigrant in its discourse because the phrase is racist, offensive, unfair, and derogatory. In a unanimous vote, the moronic student senators passed a resolution that stated the word illegal is racially charged, dehumanizes people, and contributes to punitive and discriminatory actions aimed primarily at immigrants and communities of color. Well, I suggest that we go along with the UC Berkeley student government and not use the words illegal immigrant. So we'll use the word illegal alien from now on, since that's a legalistic term that is absolutely correct. They're illegal and they're aliens. I'll go on now. Do we have any calls on any of this? If not, I'll... We can go to a best of. I mean, I'm not going to do anything else. Israel's the big story to me. Do we have any sound of John Kerry? Of course we do. Let's go to clip number one on the Savage Nation.
The P5 is doing some very important work right now. And I'm delighted to be here at the invitation of Kathy Ashton to try to work with our colleagues to see if we can narrow some differences. I want to emphasize there are still some very important issues on the table that are unresolved.
Now, no one knows what P5 is, and no one knows who Kathy Ashton is. This shows you how disconnected John Kerry is from reality, from the real world. No one knows who P5 is. I never heard of it. I don't know who Kathy Ashton is. Does she own a clothing line? What is he talking about? He's talking about basically cutting Israel's throat now that he stabbed him in the back. What do you mean he's working with your colleagues? You have colleagues in Iran that we don't know about? Who are they? Colleagues of Valerie Jarrett? So do you know what I'm talking about? Well, listen to clip two.
I want to emphasize there is not an agreement at this point in time. But the P5 is working hard. And I look forward to the meetings that I'll be having very shortly with Lady Kathy Ashton and with my fellow ministers in the P5, and then also I will be meeting with Minister Zarif.
Minister Zarif, the Minister of Death, and I still don't know what the P5 is, and I don't know who Lady Kathy Ashton is, nor do I give a rat's. I don't give a lice. A Berkeley louse doesn't interest me. A louse in the hair of a student at Berkeley interests me more than someone by the name of Lady Kathy Ashton. When I hear the name Lady Kathy Ashton, I get nauseated. Now, this meeting is, of course, very great importance to us because it means that not since Jimmy Peanut Carter did what he did back in the days of the disaster of the Peanut administration have we seen anything as deadly, with such deadly incompetence. But I'm asking you a question. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Now, I know many liberals in America, in fact, even Jewish liberals will say, I feel good about them stabbing Israel in the back. I like it. Jewish liberals across America are probably cheering that Israel got stabbed in the back because they support Obama and Kerry and the Democrats to a 90th percentile. They hate the Tea Party, which supports Israel. So I would think the Jewish liberals are celebrating tonight in synagogues across America that Obama and Kerry stabbed Israel in the back going back to June. They certainly haven't changed their politics. The synagogues haven't changed their position, which is anything Obama does is good, because he is God. So I'll ask you again. I'll ask you until you finally answer, because I'm not stopping. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Because that's what he did. Listen to what Mr. Netanyahu said in clip three.
I met Secretary Kerry right before he leaves to Geneva. I reminded him that he said, no deal is better than a bad deal. And the deal that is being discussed in Geneva right now is a bad deal. It's a very bad deal. Iran is not required to take apart even one centrifuge.
See? So now here, clip four, you'll hear the rest of the story on the Savage Nation.
Iran gets everything that it wanted at this stage, and it pays nothing. And this is when Iran is under severe pressure. I urge Secretary Kerry not to rush to sign, to wait, to reconsider, to get a good deal. But this is a bad deal, a very, very bad deal. It's the deal of the century for Iran. It's a very dangerous and bad deal for peace and the international community.
Now, if it was only Israel saying this, many of you will say, good, I'm glad. Who's Israel to push us around? And why should the tail wag the dog? But I'll remind you that Saudi Arabia is equally incensed by Kerry and Obama signing a secret deal with Iran, just so you get the big picture, okay? Just so you don't think it's only Israel. That would be bad enough, but you could say, all right, who cares about Israel? I'm sick of them. They're a bunch of greedy, pushy people who I don't care about. I'm sick of the dog, the tail wagging the dog. Let them screw themselves already. Many people feel that way, by the way, about Israel, except for the Christian conservative movement in America, which has been marginalized by this communist regime. But I will remind you that Saudi Arabia is also anguished over this. So who is Obama answering to by doing the secret deal with Iran is the question. This is only one man's opinion. You can dismiss it if you wish. After all, who am I to make an opinion? Who am I to have an opinion when I'm just a talk show host? Now, of course, I began the week by warning you not to take the flu vaccine. And although it was posted on Drudge for me, it was a year ago. It got 900,000 hits or a million hits. I don't know how many. And why believe me? What are you listening to him for? Go to your local doctor, your AMA doctor. He knows everything. Ask the doctor. He knows. Well, strange, a story came out today that said a Johns Hopkins scientist slams the flu vaccine. And where was it published? Wait a minute. Savage said it on Monday. It can't be true. A Johns Hopkins scientist has issued a blistering report on influenza vaccines in a British medical journal. Wow. The BMJ confirms what Savage said? And I'm only a talk show host? Merely with an epidemiology and human nutrition PhD from the University of California? And I was right? How could that be? He's a conservative. He's a right-winger. What does he know? Who knows? Who knows what he knows? But the big topic is not the flu vaccine. If you want the vaccine, then you don't. You know what I think you should do if you're a liberal? Get two flu vaccines. Get two. Take one. Get one free. Take an extra one for me. Do me a favor. If every Democrat in America took two flu vaccine shots, we might actually have a sane nation at the end of the year. I won't finish why, but you can figure that one out. No, they're so safe. Take two of them. In fact, take three of them. Because I'm wrong about everything. You should take three flu vaccine shots if you're a Democrat. And conservatives shouldn't take one. Now, there's another story today that I haven't yet told you about. He fired two admirals now. He did it tonight. It came out tonight in the Washington Post at the last minute. He fired two more. The man is purging the military of everyone who might stand up to him. Two U.S. admirals, including the director of Naval Intelligence, were dismissed tonight. Placed on leave Friday night, and their access to classified material was suspended. Again, obviously on trumped-up charges by the master of the purge. The greatest purge since Joseph Stalin did it is going on right in front of your nose, but because we have a gelded press, look it up. It's another word that you may not have heard of, like mulk the public. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Iran gets everything that it wanted at this stage, and it pays nothing. And this is when Iran is under severe pressure. I urge Secretary Kerry not to rush to sign, to wait, to reconsider.
Pause right there. The question to the audience is, one, what do Hassan Rouhani and Barack Hussein share in common? What do Hassan Rouhani and Barack Hussein share in common? And how do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? I mean, it's a simple question. You don't think this is an important question? I don't think you understand. Someone wrote on the articles on the bottom, I love blog comments, they're like callers, but they write them. And one wrote, Obama is one of two things. One, the most completely incompetent, naive, gullible, dangerously foolish president to ever hold office, including Jimmy Carter. Or, two, the most cunning, duplicitous, Marxist, manipulating, anti-American usurper to lie, cheat, and steal his way into the White House. Which is he? And then he writes, does it matter? In this case, I don't think it matters. It's that simple. It's beyond belief. He's not negotiating with these folks from Iran. They have gotten what they wanted. They're going to get a nuclear weapon. And then what are we going to do? So Israel has to make a decision. Either they've been crying wolf and saying, you know, one more step and I'll fight with you. One more step and I'll fight with you. And then the steps, they can begin pushed to the wall now. Either they're going to do their own thing or they're not going to do it. I don't see how they can do it on their own. I don't see how they can bomb Iran. And what's that going to yield? WABC, John, how do you feel about this breaking news tonight on the Savage Nation?
Hi, Michael. I support the right that Israel and the Israelis in that country have to exist. However, the Jews in America who are not Israeli support Obama and their own interests more than the people of their own religion. I don't want to see any harm done to the people or state of Israel, but you do reap what you sow.
What do you mean by reap what they sow?
I don't want this to come out wrong. Somehow they put, in this country, they're putting their wealth ahead of their own interests, ahead of what's not only good for the
American... You're assuming that all American Jews are wealthy, which is stereotype number one, and not true number two. We're talking about the average Jewish Democrat in America supports and worships Obama. They would rather have their wedding ring finger cut off their hand than ever vote Republican. And here is a man who they worship who stabbed Israel in the back. Do they not understand it?
Right, Michael, but you yourself said a few minutes ago that the liberal Jewish people in this country are the ones...
I think it's summarized in another way. Liberalism is a mental disorder. It's an untreatable, incurable mental disorder with self-survival at the bottom of the list of values, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, it's a Friday night, and most people are into the weekend modality already. I don't know what they're doing, but the fact of the matter is the duplicitousness of Barack Obama and John Kerry has reached a new level of, a new height, let's put it that way, without making it bigger than it is. They stabbed Israel in the back. It came out today that as of June, they're already giving in on sanctions to the mullahs in Iran without telling anybody. So it leaves Israel in a crazy place. Joining us right now is a great guest. He's been on twice before this year. Everyone loves him. Waleed Shobat, former Muslim Brotherhood member of the PLO, former terrorist. He wrote a book called The Case for Islamophobia. The Case for Islamophobia. You can read his work at shobat.com. Waleed, welcome back to the program on this crazy night. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Oh, I pressed the wrong button. Waleed, welcome to the program. Waleed. So, Waleed, I read the news this morning on Drudge. I was stunned that Obama had been negotiating with the mullahs in June.
Well, of course, you know, this is going to leave Iran with the capacity to build nuclear weapons. A total suspension of uranium enrichment, by the way, doesn't seem to be in the cards in this negotiation in Geneva. At best, a commitment, which is a false promise from the Iranians, who are Islamists, and by nature they practice taqiyya, the limited enrichment will just slow down work.
When you said something which I understand, but my listeners didn't. You said they're Islamists and they practice, did you say taqiyya?
Taqiyya, yes.
Which means you can lie to an infidel to get your way. Is that what that means?
That is correct. The Shia...
Is that why Obama practices that methodology?
Obama is originally Sunni. Sunnis practice what is called Muruna. Muruna is to be stealth, is to sanction prohibitions for a detrimental time period in order to gain concessions. And that's practiced by the Muslim Brotherhood. The spirit head of the Muslim Brotherhood, Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, instituted this practice.
But that's what Obama just practiced against John Boehner and the Republicans.
Well, yes, I believe, as I mentioned before in your program.
So he learned well. He learned his techniques, his negotiation tactics beat that of the Russians. There used to be a thing in business negotiations called the Russian method, which is first you get what you want and then you raise the stakes and ask for more. But this seems to be a new level of negotiation.
Right. Let's not forget, you know, Valerie Garrett, she's his assistant. She's born in Iran, and let's not forget, her father-in-law and Barack Obama's mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, were colleagues in Chicago. So there is influence from within his own.
You understand that Valerie Jarrett plays a prominent role in all of his decisions. Do you think her Iranian ancestry has anything to do with it?
Well, yes. I mean, let's not even forget, even when you talk about Iran itself, you know, you have Hassan Rouhani, who's the president of Iran. He's Azeri Turk, which means that when the West sinks, that they could thwart the Sunni rising to power by basically aiding Iran. Well, you have an alliance between Turkey and Iran because of the Azeri connection. These religious leaders of Iran are all Azeri Turks. So we have to understand the makeup of the Muslim world before we...
I heard that from an Iranian who's very proud of his heritage, who escaped the mullahs in the late 70s, who said that, what's his name, the last president, the one who kept saying Israel should die and we'll kill them all. He kept saying he was a Turk. Is that true?
Yeah, Azeri Turks. That's correct. And
how did they take over Iran, this branch of the Turkish people?
Well, in the 11th century, they moved to Central Asia, the Oghuz Turks, that is, and began to build, to make prominent power. And they are a minority in Iran. Nevertheless, they're a major voting bloc in Iran. This is why the religious institution are Azeri Turks. And this is why Turkey has interfered in the past in regarding the enrichment of uranium in Iran, and had stated to the world to hands off Iran because they'll take care of the whole issue. Of course, there in the future, once there is a Shia crescent, in other words, once Iran builds its nuclear weapons, which I've been arguing for years, this will build the power peg of Iran into Iraq. Iraq is majority Shia. Syria is ruled by a Shia government. And then you have also Hezbollah in Lebanon. That will be the threat to the northern borders of Israel, but it is not inconceivable to have a Sunni alliance with Shia in Iran, because Hamas in the past have allied with Hezbollah against Israel. So this whole idea of basically balancing the power between Shia and Sunni will not work, because they could ally. And if they do ally, and Iran has nuclear weapons, that threatens also Saudi Arabia. And by the way, Saudi Arabia is currently... already have ordered their nuclear bomb from Pakistan. They're working on a nuclear bomb, so which means the armament of the Middle East will continue as a result of what Barack Obama is doing with the Iranians. And by that, Saudi Arabia feels more threatened than Israel even.
That's what I said at the beginning. Waleed, you speak Arabic and you know what they write and say in their home countries, but what I read in the English language literature today is that the Saudis are more freaked out by this backstabbing by Obama than the Israelis are.
That is absolutely correct. The Saudi government is more afraid of Iran than anything else. The Shia-Sunni divide between Saudi Arabia and Iran has historic connection, in which the Sunnis have always assassinated imams in the past. And of course, the most major threat to Saudi Arabia is Iran, Persia. And so, you know, there goes the oil issue, there goes the entire Middle East.
So why is Obama secretly aiding and abetting the arrival of this pan-Arabism across the Middle East, or if you want to call it the crescent, the Shia crescent?
Well, I mean,
why is he doing this?
Well, I mean, Obama, in my view, has always been culturally Muslim. We can discuss this if you didn't agree with me. But you can see his alliance with his own family. Malik Obama, his brother, works for the Sudanese government. He is the official employee of the Sudanese terror state. He works as the executive director of the Dawah organization of the government of Sudan. And he's very well connected with his family. So it is not far-fetched. In fact, his brother is the elder of the family. In other words, culturally speaking, Obama must obey his brother in a culture setting, that is. And he's been given latitude with the IRS, He runs a polygamy compound in Kenya. He works very closely with the terrorist infrastructure of Sudan. Obama does not like his brother George Otieno because of his Christian mother. These things Americans don't even look into. But
amazing.
It's a fact
it's
that
amazing.
Obama is very close-knit, connected with his Sunni family, and they are very much Islamist. They work with the Wahhabists. We've done an entire research on the Obama family.
We're speaking with a man who knows much more than I do about the subject, but the main topic today for the average American audience listening in cars and homes around the country, perhaps on the Internet, is that we learned today that your hero, the hero of liberalism, the hero of Jewish America, the hero of the Democrat machine, Barack Obama, has stabbed Israel in the back. They lifted Iran sanctions months ago. Iran is on the way to a nuclear weapon. Israel now has very few options left. And we're speaking with a man who reads and speaks Arabic, Walid Shobat. And he's a member today of the civilized world, but he wasn't always there. Former Muslim Brotherhood member. Weren't you a member of the PLO, Walid?
Yes, at first. Then when I was in the States, I was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, my mentor was a colleague of Abdullah Azzam, who's the godfather of Al-Qaeda. So we understand how to infiltrate the West, sort of like Captain Spock and you, Captain Kirk. And Captain Kirk doesn't usually understand how the alien world works, not meaning you, but the American people in
general. They don't understand anything. All the average American knows is what the sports scores are. Well, what a nation. What a nation. How else could this unknown, inexperienced senator who got there by accident as a senator have become president other than we're a nation of morons?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Walid. I have contempt for my own fellow citizens. They got the leadership they deserve, but he's got three more years, Walid. And he's just done perhaps the most transparent thing he could ever do to show what he really thinks of Israel and the Jewish state. And yet the Jewish voices in America are silent today.
Absolutely. In fact, Israel's security needs to act on its own. Israel only has one remaining course, and that is to exercise its military option against Iran. But how could they exercise a military option when the United States is negotiating with Iran and having this Geneva agreement? So it becomes, you know, Israel will begin to look like a pariah and a warmonger if and when it attacks the nuclear facility. Israel had an opportunity years ago, but they failed to act upon it.
Yes.
Fear of insulting the Americans.
Yes. So if Israel does what they say they've been doing for years now, we're going to do, which is we have to attack. Now Obama lifts the sanctions without getting anything back from Iran. Do you actually think Israel will attack? Because I don't think they will.
No. Impossible. They will not attack for many reasons. That is, they will not get the support of the U.S., number one. Number two, the centrifuges are many and underground, and without the aid of the United States, it's a very much a difficult mission. And, you know, they have also Saudi Arabia is in the mix. So in my view, it will end up as a showdown between Saudi Arabia and Iran, in which Saudi Arabia will end up being the loser. I believe in the future, Saudi Arabia will get nuked by Iran. And this will happen, and there will be a huge problem. So
Wait, let's pause. That's a heck of a statement.
This for many years.
Walid, let me ask you something. During the Hajj, isn't the Hajj open to all sects, or the two major, the only sects I know of Islam are Sunni and Shia? It's open to both. Isn't that correct, the Hajj, the pilgrimage?
That is correct, but it doesn't mean there's no problems that the Shiites have caused in the past, even in Mecca itself. At one point in time, the Saudis had to kind of poison gas the demonstrators and kill many Shiite demonstrators. In fact, even in Iran, they tried to build their own Kaaba. So,
oh, my God. That's a big story unto itself. This is awesome, Walid. You know what amazes me? Each time you're on this show of mine, The Savage Nation, you and I think like we're brothers or cousins. It's astounding. I mean, I'm just speaking out loud. I'm thinking out loud. I don't have a script. You are also brazen enough to use your brains publicly, which is amazing. But we come to the same conclusions. How is that possible when we come from such different backgrounds? Why is that?
Well, because we have a similar spiritual fountain. When I become a Christian, I go to the Torah, I go to the Old Testament, I revere the Old Testament, I revere the laws of Moses, I begin to understand I don't have to give my life or my son's life for the sake of Allah, that in Christianity God gave his son already to save my life and my son's life. So the fountain is the Judeo-Christian ethics, which, by the way, needs to begin to argue its supremacy in the world. Let's not forget, it is impossible to negotiate with Iran, because in the Islamic concept, the Quran says, "Kuntum khayra ummatin ukhrijat linnas." You were the most favored of all people. In other words, the Muslims are superior to non-Muslims. We need to start thinking in the same way and in the same wavelength to say Judeo-Christian ethics are superior, and we need to thwart the Islamic superiority by our own code of ethics, which we are not exercising in the West. We seem to think that equality of religion is the way. But in the ancient times, there was no religious equality amongst Christendom. It has to be the superiority of the Judeo-Christian ethics. And this is the problem in the West.
Yes, because the West has basically turned into an apologetic, liberal entity that is apologizing for its so-called ethics. Around the globe, Christianity is apologetic rather than, let us say, celebratory about what it has given the world. It dwells only on the negatives, not on the positives. But that's a topic for another day. When I come back with Waleed, it's very important people go to your website, shoebat.com, shoebat.com. Read his book. He was a Muslim, called The Case for Islamophobia. Waleed is here. Unfortunately, if we have an open line, I'll leave one or two open lines. I don't know what people could ask that I'm not going to ask or you're not going to say. When I come back, Waleed, what I'd like to touch on is I want to go beyond this issue of Iran getting a nuclear weapon, which seems to be what Obama has decided will happen, and get nothing in exchange. I want to ask you what you think about the bigger threat, in my opinion, which is the lawless nation of Pakistan, which has, what, 30 nuclear weapons already?
Oh, some assume 100 nuclear weapons. We don't know for
100 nuclear weapons in a basically lawless nation called Pakistan, and what the chances are of Pakistan launching against us, Israel, or one of our allies, either directly or through a terrorist organization. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
So Iran got the deal of the century, and the international community got a bad deal. This is a very bad deal. Israel utterly rejects it.
Well, Israel may reject it all at once, but Iran is the big winner here. Obama has thrown in with the Iranians. He has basically eased sanctions, even though, of course, he's lying through Kerry and saying that we haven't really lifted the sanctions. It came out today in the Daily Beast that as of June, they were already lifting sanctions against Iran, which were the only things that kept Iran somewhat in line, and now it's over. A review of Treasury Department notices reveals that the U.S. government has all but stopped the financial blacklisting of entities and people that help Iran evade international sanctions since the election of its president Hassan Rouhani in June. What's interesting to me is there's a TV show called Homeland, which is so remarkable in so many ways, and it's about a U.S. congressman who really is an agent of Al-Qaeda. It's also about, the current episode is about a banker who is on the side of Iran running their money laundering, and what he will do in his duplicitous ways to make certain that Iran continues to evade the sanctions. But now we have no need for such shows, do we? There's an open love affair with Iran under Obama. Joining us again is our great guest, Waleed Shoebat, former Muslim Brotherhood member. He knows more than you do. He knows much more than you do, you doubting Thomases. Go to Shoebat.com. Waleed, so we both agreed in the last segment that Israel will not act. We pretty much know they can't. Isn't that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Israel will not act. The U.S. certainly said it's not going to act. So where does that leave Iran? between you and I, they're not crazy. They're not going to suddenly start bombing Israel, are they?
Well, you never know. I mean, they're not going to suddenly bomb Israel, maybe not. But they're going to begin to expand because they have now an argument. They have nuclear power. And to then to thwart Iran's political expansion into the region in Iraq and also Syria and Hezbollah begins to make a threat at Israel. In other words, the attacks will commence from many nations in this case, not just Iran. It's the unity of Islamic nations. We're not talking about terrorist organizations in this case. We're talking about terrorist states in this case. So even with the so-called moderates of Turkey, you look at Turkey itself, they're a major threat to Israel, and the Azeri connection, they could also unite with the Shia. So you have an Islamic belt right around Israel. And, of course, the issue of Jerusalem, talking about peace talks, Kerry's pressuring Israel all the time to do away with settlements and so on and so forth, threatening Israel.
And to give up half of Jerusalem in advance of anything. But, you know, we didn't even touch on it, Waleed. Maybe you have a few minutes at the top of the hour to talk about Pakistan and their nuclear weapons. What do you think the relative threat level is from the nukes in Pakistan?
Well, let's not forget, Pakistan has 100, almost 100 nuclear weapons. It's the number one source of jihadism.
So why didn't they just ferry one over to Iran? Why does Iran even have to build one?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Iran gets everything that it wanted at this stage, and it pays nothing. And this is when Iran is under severe pressure. I urge Secretary Kerry not to rush to sign, to wait, to reconsider, to get a good deal. But this is a bad deal, a very, very bad deal. It's the deal of the century for Iran. It's a very dangerous and bad deal.
I still get chills up my spine when I listen to Bob Dylan singing this song. The times certainly are a-changing. There's John Kerry, who's gone from a swift boat to a swift kick in the behind of Netanyahu. Many of you say it's long overdue. The left hates Israel. The left would like Israel to disappear. And the left is probably cheering that Valerie Jarrett's White House was secretly negotiating with Iran behind the back of not only Israel, but behind the back of our own Congress. A Daily Beast investigation was reported today that the U.S. was lifting financial pressure on Iran going back to June, and in return getting nothing. So this is your Kerry, this is your Obama. The question tonight is, well, there are many questions, mainly how do you feel about Obama and Kerry stabbing Israel in the back. But, you know, there's another way to look at this, and many people probably look at it that way. They're so tired at the end of the day, struggling with their own personal demons, their own personal lives, their finances, their children, their parents, their mother, their father, existence itself, that they could care less about Israel. Israel is now so far removed from the psyche of most Americans. It's not what it was 20 or 30 years ago. Why? There's a number of reasons. One, we have a more narcissistic, not president, that's a given. We have a more self-centered electorate in America than any in history. The baby boomer generation could care less about Israel. They care about health care, free prescription drugs, and Viagra. That's what they care about. They're focused not on the pebble in the shoe, but on something else, as the great Roman historian said. The average Roman in his time didn't care about where the legions were, whether they were winning or losing. They cared about the pebble in the shoe. And today the average senior liberal in particular cares only about not the pebble in his shoe, but the Viagra in his medicine cabinet. And so although that sounds clever, the question is, where do we go with this cat and mouse game now? Is Israel really going to disappear if Iran gets a nuclear weapon? That's one question. But the bigger issue really is, and this is what most Americans would say, how can we do anything about it? We don't have the military. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the money to be the world's policeman anymore. So, really, you're acting as if It's America of 40 years ago when it isn't. We've lost our edge. We've lost it. Obama has decimated the military. He fired two more admirals tonight. He's cut out the combat leadership in the military. He has feminized and homosexualized the military. So where's the military that could do anything about this, even if we had a president who wanted to do it right now? He has gutted the military. Everybody knows that, who knows what's going on inside the military. But put that aside. Where is this supposed to come from? Do we have the money to be the world's policeman? And should we be the world's policeman? Well, some would say yes. Others would say no. And that leaves us right now talking about how do you feel tonight if you heard it for the first time tonight, and I suppose you have because I know it wasn't on Fox News. I know it wasn't on CNN or any of the other networks. So far as I know, they're talking about Obamacare probably. It's strange for me on Friday nights. I seem to have the most intense shows. With us now is someone who knows much more about the situation than I do. I've never met the man. He lives in hiding. He's a former member of the Muslim Brotherhood, previously a member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, was arrested for being a terrorist, was a Muslim at birth, converted to Christianity. His name is Waleed Shubat. His book is The Case for Islamophobia. He can be found online at shubat.com. And he joins us again on the Savage Nation. Waleed, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Where would you like to go with the situation right now, Waleed? What would you like to talk about?
Well, I mean, you brought up Pakistan. I mean, we talk about Iran building nuclear weapons. Pakistan is the number one source of jihadi suicide bombers. They're the ground zero for training of Islamist terrorists around the world. In fact, every terrorist attack that has to do with Pakistani terrorists has been condemning Israel. And, of course, the transfer of nuclear ability to North Korea by AQ Khan in the past, and, in fact, even in 2003, you know, it was exposed that by the United States intelligence, Western intelligence, in the early 2000s, a ship was seized by the U.S. authorities on October 2003, route from Dubai to Libya, found contains 1,000 centrifuge components. In other words, it was being sent to Libya in the early 2000s, and today, what do we have? We have, on January 1st, 2013, Crown Prince Salman of Saudi Arabia, who's the deputy premier and defense minister, traveled to Islamabad, commissioned the Pakistani government to build nuclear weapons for, you know, a multi-billion dollar fee and all that stuff. So now Saudi Arabia, which is a Wahhabi...
Coming up on the next morning...
And this was exposed by Amos Yaldin, is Israeli military intelligence... So we know for a fact that now Saudi Arabia is going to begin to its own nuclear program. In the past, we've seen it with Libya. So now we don't even know in the future who next will have nuclear weapons. Could be Turkey, could be, you know, any country in the Middle East. The Turks, of course, are going to stand by seeing the Saudis armed. Turkey is the number one military power in the region, you know, and of course it presents a threat to Israel. It's an Islamist government. Let's not forget the AK Party is Islamist.
But they make beautiful yachts in Turkey. They still, many Americans buy Turkish-built yachts. They make beautiful yachts. You know, that's a strange statement, but it's, it was the first nation...
Own weapons?
And weapons, but I'm saying Turkey was the first nation to grant women the right to vote. You know that better than I do.
Right.
And it's a strange paradox what Turkey has become under Erdogan, which was moving backwards into some Islamist past when it had been such a almost a light in the Muslim world. Wouldn't you say it was a light in the Muslim world for so long?
That is correct, but it's the elephant in the room that is playing the card with the Turkish model that is secular Islam. It's more moderate form than the Muslim Brotherhood, than Al-Qaeda, than all these other infrastructures. So now it's kind of becoming the model, and it's, of course it's an ally of the United States, it's part of NATO. You know, the armies of Turkey can move into Europe in the future. It can defeat France, Germany, and England combined with its military. So we have a huge power in the Middle East that is...
Yeah, I want to remind people that Turkey has always had a powerful... military. In fact, Winston Churchill was a commander, and he lost a battle at Gallipoli, where so many thousands of young British New Zealanders and Australians were slaughtered by the Turks because it was a disastrous mistake on the part of Winston Churchill in his early years. So Gallipoli is all about the power of the Turkish military even then. But I don't want to get distracted here from the issue at hand, Waleed, because this is disturbing to some and frankly means nothing to others. Let me ask an esoteric question. We both agreed in the last hour that Israel basically will do nothing. We both agreed on that, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So Iran now becomes a nuclear power. Iran's not going to just categorically drop a nuclear weapon on Tel Aviv, and Tel Aviv's not going to drop a nuclear weapon on Tehran. Okay, so the world goes on, and people say, so what, big deal? What is the big deal?
Well, the big deal is a negotiating powerhouse, you know, when it has nuclear, the ability for Israel or the United States to attack it will become very diminished. It begins to expand its Islamist ideology. It has control over Hamas. It has control over Hezbollah. It has control over Syria. It's having control over Iraq. It wants to destroy Saudi Arabia. It has a problem with Saudi Arabia, which begins, that the Sunni alliances would have to face with Iran or even unite with Iran. And, of course, the one who's going to suffer the most is the state of Israel and the Christians. You look at even in Syria, the situation of the Christians under the Islamists, you have in the...
What's going on with the Christians in Syria? They're protected by Assad. And, of course, McCain and Lindsey Graham wanted to destroy Assad, which would have led to the decimation of the Syrian Christian community. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, currently you talk about the Christians in Syria. You know, you have 40... The largest massacre happened in recent history. 45 Christians slaughtered in the village of Sadad by Muslim fanatics, by Muslim Brotherhood operatives, in which you have, lately, 1,500 families were taken hostage by the Islamist rebels. In fact, you know...
Wait a minute. These are the same rebels that Obama wants to give weapons to and is giving weapons to and the CIA is training?
Absolutely. The United States government currently is standing with the Islamists. Where is the war on terror? This is my argument. Anybody who says we have a war on terror needs to answer, what are we doing in Syria? Needs to answer, why are we ousting Hosni Mubarak in placing the Muslim Brotherhood, Mohammed Morsi? And why?
Well, even the Egyptian people wouldn't stand for it. They told McCain to go to hell and go home when he came there and tried to tell them how to run their affairs. But the Syrian Christian community is protected by Assad, is it not?
Absolutely. They love Bashar al-Assad. They want him to remain in power. But of course, still, you know, the government of Syria is anti-Israel. But by far, this is much better still yet than the Muslim Brotherhood, the second largest, you know, basically power peg of the Muslim Brotherhood is in Syria. If you recall historically, it was the father of Bashar al-Assad, Hafez al-Assad, who annihilated the Muslim Brotherhood.
And didn't he do it in Hamas? I'm sorry, in the northern city of, was it Homs? How do you say it in Arabic, the city that he killed 40,000 Muslims in?
I think it's Hama.
Hama. I always mix it up, right? It's Hama. He killed 40,000 people. Was that 30 years ago? I was stunned by that. That was Assad's father.
That's correct. But the West doesn't understand the Middle East, even under Saddam Hussein. That's how he dealt with the Islamists. You just basically annihilate them. This is how the Egyptians dealt with the Muslim Brotherhood. Any leader comes up, you have Gamal Abdel Nasser, hang him on the gallows. You know, this is what happened to Sayyid Qutb. That's how you deal with the Islamists in the Middle East. But of course, Americans want democracy in the Middle East, and by...
Oh, yes, they love democracy, don't they? Except here in America, where they trick every election, they rig every election, they flood the polls with illegal aliens. It's unbelievable to me how they can talk out of one side of their mouth about democracy in the Middle East and practice a form of Chicago daily politics that's unheard of in the rest of the world. But, you know, I have callers on the line right now, on the program right now, Waleed, that are wanting to say a few things. Hold on one minute. Waleed, stay with us. Waleed Shubat has to hear some of this, and then we're going to ask some questions. These are great callers. Andre on KSFO in San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I've been a listener for over 12 years, and it's really an honor to connect with you tonight. I know you're... a fan of logic and a practitioner of logic, and I just wanted to put forward this bit of logic. Iran does not need nuclear weapons for self-defense. That we know. And secondly, if Iran has nuclear weapons, then that the purpose of them having the nuclear weapons is not for self-defense. Therefore, their need for nuclear weapons is to abolish or destroy some other nation. And I think that that bit of logic in itself should basically make it obscene that they
would. But Andre, did you vote for Barack Obama?
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me?
I don't know. Some people were hoodwinked. They thought he was a wonderful, peace-loving man. Well, I thank you for that call. Another caller is saying, James from Mississippi. James, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation quickly. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I was wondering why Red China hasn't said anything about, you know, Iran wanting to get the nuclear bomb right on their doorstep and ready to spread their poison into Red China.
Why is China not concerned about Iran getting a nuke is the question. Waleed, any answer to that? We'll take Waleed's answer when we return about why is China not concerned about Iran getting a nuclear weapon. I can answer that one, and I'm no expert. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The shocker tonight is that Obama and Kerry secretly lifted Iran sanctions months ago. They've given Iran the deal of the century. Iran is behind most of the terrorist attacks that our boys have been facing for years now. They've killed our soldiers, maimed our soldiers, blinded our soldiers. And here we have an administration doing a deal with the devil. And I've asked you how you feel about that. Waleed Shubat, you've got the last word tonight on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What would you like to say to the audience?
Well, I mean, in the last question about China, I think China has immense deals with Iran, the North Pars natural field, since 2006. Of course, they deal with the imports of 3 million tons of liquefied natural gas annually from Iran. So we're talking about deals and things of that sort that goes on. Of course, you have nuclear deals between Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, which basically we're looking at a Middle East with nuclear power peg, which when it becomes nuclear power peg, and of course, Pakistan, even under Bhutto, talked about the Islamic bomb. Let's not forget what it's called, the Islamic bomb. That is a nuclear bomb. And we have, 100 nuclear in Pakistan with the United States basically aiding and abetting the terror infrastructure in which the jihadis and the Islamic Revolution is taking place.
Is that why Obama is purging the generals and the admirals? I mean, something's wrong with this picture from those of us who understand about the purge in the military. Waleed, we're almost out of time. As usual, this was supposed to be a 15-minute interview, but because you are a cousin in thought, if not a brother in spirit, Waleed Shubat, former Muslim Brotherhood member, remember who you listen to tonight with the Savage Nation. This is not a joke. This is not something to dismiss lightly. Read his book, The Case for Islamophobia. Visit him at Shubat.com. I'll be right back to take your calls on the Savage Nation, 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Mike Huckabee.
And that is the problem with the American tax system.
On Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
I thank you for hanging in there with me. This interview went 1 hour. As you know, I'm not an interview-generated show. Most talk radio, not most, some don't, some do. Some rely entirely on guests because they don't know what to say without them. And it's usually Ted Cruz or one of the other, let us say, party favorites of the time, which is fine, but it's boring after a while. I generally don't like politicians because they don't say anything that is of any, let us say, mental merit. I don't want to use the big I word, the intellectual word, because it scares people. But I will say, of no mental merit, who needs them on the show? This man, Waleed Shubat, is so smart and comes from such a complex background that hour flew by for me, and I hope it did for you. But what did you take away from it? Did you learn anything you didn't know? Did you learn anything about the Islamist tendencies of this government that frightened you at all? Or are you glad that Obama has stabbed Israel in the back? Maybe you're glad about it. I don't know. Maybe you feel good about it. Scott in Connecticut loves it. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I don't love it. I do feel that the Obama administration did go behind Israel's back to cut this deal with Iran. However, I do feel that we have supported Iran over the past 40 years so much with military and financial resources.
You mean supported Israel. I'm sure that's what you meant.
Say again?
You said Iran. You meant we've supported Israel for 40 years.
Oh, Israel. Yes, I'm sorry. And I think it's time that Israel kind of stands on its own, and they are their own strong nation, and they have a lot of great people there that do and will support themselves.
Well, I agree with you. I've said the same thing on my show, is that I'm sick and tired of Israel dictating to us our foreign policy. I've said that, but this is a little different, Scott. This is Obama not being a silent ally, but an overt enemy of Israel. This is not saying to Israel, go it alone. We wish you well. You're an ally of ours. They're saying we have now joined the other side. We've joined your worst opposition. It's a much different story than you may see it as. And why is he doing it? See, what you don't really see is, again, the chess game Valerie Jarrett is playing. Unfortunately for most talk radio listeners, they're playing a game that's very brilliant from their point of view. You may not like it, but they're very smart people. Anybody who underestimates Obama's strategist is making a huge error. And they say, well, come on now. Look, Obamacare just blew up. Well, that's because they didn't design the website. They just smeared it off to someone for the $1 billion and figured they could do it. They got screwed by themselves because no one could out-con a con man but another con man. So he got conned by the con man who ran the website. But from their point of view, from the chess game they're playing, they're winning. What they're doing here, one man's opinion. I don't go to any, I don't know what they're doing. In my opinion, I'm looking from the outside in. This is why you listen to the show. You want my analysis. Valerie Jarrett, I would say Obama, but I really don't dare say that. Valerie Jarrett wants to push Israel into a corner with Iran on one side threatening them with a nuclear weapon and the U.S. withdrawing its support on the other side and say to them, look, here's your choice. Either you give up the entire West Bank, Judea, Samaria to the Jewish people. You give up the West Bank, you create a Palestinian state so Obama can get another Nobel Prize, or else you will have hell to pay. Don't underestimate where they're coming from, the Obamaites. They want to break America in half by flooding us with 50 million illegal aliens, primarily from south of the border, and they want to break Israel in half. Why? There are many reasons why. The left has wanted this for a long time, for many reasons. But, you know, it goes way back to Karl Marx's statement, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. So if in this case the egg is Israel, so be it. And for the omelet of socialism, they must break America as well. It's really quite clear to Valerie Jarrett. You may say, come on, don't be stupid. They're in it for the money, you know. There's all sorts of money. Whoever said Marxists were poor? Where'd you get the idea that Marxists were poor? What do you think, they were revolutionary communists walking around in poverty with the people? When Castro stole Cuba from the Cuban people, when he stole Cuba from the mafia and the Cuban people, who benefited from it, the Cuban people or Fidel Castro and his elite cohorts? If you know anything about it, it was Fidel Castro and his cohorts who became just like the pigs at Animal Farm. They took over the farm and they became the pigs. After promising the people that they would have democracy, what they got was, you know what, a sugar cane in the you-know-where. So it's the same everywhere. It's the same everywhere. The ex-Soviet Union was run by a very small elitist group, the Politburo. They had country homes. They had chauffeurs, bodyguards. Doesn't that sound very, very familiar to you? Well, that's where we're going. There was no middle class in the ex-Soviet Union. Remember when I was a little boy, my mother would explain to me that the whole difference between our way of life and communism can be summarized in the size of the middle class. I kind of understood that. And that was true then. But Obama is attacking the middle class from every possible angle, primarily now with the medical system, but soon to be with the flood of illegal aliens. The middle class will pay for that as well. And so by shrinking the middle class, he creates a vast population of the poor and a very small population of the super rich, his friends who put him in power and keep him in power. Now take a look at who's in the White House tonight. none other than Harvey Weinstein. You know by his name, he must be of Jewish origins. And he's smiling as Michelle gives a speech. Harvey's having a good time. Do you think that Harvey said anything about Israel? No, because secular Jews generally are not attached to Israel. Secular Jews could care less about Israel. Secular Jews like South Beach more than they like Tel Aviv Beach. Secular Jews, I don't have to make any more silly syllogisms, but the thing is, they could care less. Israel means nothing to them. A guy like Harvey Weinstein, what's Israel? Nothing. It's not even a postage stamp. Zero. So you say, oh, Jews. What does a Jew mean? What does the word Jewish mean? Do you think Jews are a secret organization? Everyone knows each other? So who is talking to Obama from the point of view of the Jewish community? Nobody. Nobody. The rabbis haven't said anything. Whatever Obama and Michelle want, the rabbis do. If they say grant amnesty to illegals, just like the Catholics tell the priests, talk about it, make it a human right, the priests do it, the rabbis do it. What does rabbi mean? Nothing. You think a rabbi, oh, you're a rabbi. Look at that, he's got a beard and a black coat. Oh, rabbi. What does that mean? A teacher. So what does that mean? There are good teachers and bad teachers. There are smart teachers and stupid teachers. What is the word rabbi? Oh, I thought it was God. God himself created them. Oh, there goes a holy man. Look at that. Oh, look at that. He's got a black coat on and a beard. Oh, he's a holy man. Don't go near him. Well, you don't know who he is. He could be a good man and a holy man. He could be a bad man and a dumb man. He could be a holy man and an evil man. What does it mean when he wears a black coat and a beard? Nothing. So don't look to the word to think you will understand the man by the word. The word rabbi means today about as much as the word professor means in an American university. You know what I think about that class of people, by and large, except in the hard sciences. And here we are now. So now that I've gone in circles on this issue, I'll take your calls on the Savage Nation, 855-407-282. What an hour that was. That was amazing how it flew by. And I want to tell you something else. I remember last Friday night, I did my show from San Francisco at KSFO Studios. Remember that flew by? It was a great show. It was another great show. I forget what the topic was. It seems to me every Friday night, which is normally a death zone in radio, my time slot's Siberia, number one. I've turned Siberia into a Miami beach. The sun is always out on this show. No matter when I do it, people find it. They'll turn off the TVs. They won't go to the movies, and I have a huge audience. That's why I was granted the move to a drive time, which is coming up in January, God willing. And I'll say God willing because I don't know what tomorrow will bring. Nobody does. I'm very humble about it. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. But the fact is, as the people who gave me drive time said, Michael, you've worked for it and you've earned it, which is why you got it. Don't think this was done overnight, and don't think it was done without much thought. It was done with great thought and 20 years of hard work. And so I say to you tonight on the Savage Nation that tonight is one of the most important news nights of the year. While you were watching Obamacare and while you were listening to the drivel on Obamacare day and night, I would turn it on. I cannot believe it, how intelligent men could do this every second of their waking life without jumping out of a window. I'd ask myself, he can't be stupid to survive all these years on radio. And that's all he's doing. Day and night, the same thing. There must be something else. No. That's it. And then I heard Fox News was doing the same thing. Blondie was doing it. So it's Blondie and Dagwood are doing Obamacare. They think that you're that naive and that limited in your thinking. And all the while you were focused on that, Obama was doing this. Just as I told you, they're moving to grant amnesty while you're focused on that. And so I have an interesting job. In many ways, my job is very interesting because very demanding, meaning you know, either you're really interested into this and you eat, drink, and sleep it, or you don't. And if you don't, you shouldn't be in the business. I couldn't believe it when I woke up this morning. I go to the Drudge Report, and I said, what? Obama secretly lifted Iran's sanctions in June? I couldn't believe what I was looking at. Then I see this headline, Obama eyes executive orders as second term crumbles. That's the headline now on the Drudge Report. I can't believe what I'm looking at. And there's Harvey Weinstein laughing as Michelle Obama repeats some idiotic, stupid story with Whoopi Cushion Goldberg sitting next to him. And I say, there goes the world. There goes the world. Deborah is calling us. Welcome to the program. Where are you calling from, Deborah?
I'm calling from Tel Aviv, Israel. Good evening, Dr. Savage.
Oh, shalom from Tel Aviv, Israel. You're listening on the internet, I suppose. How do you feel tonight knowing that the American president did this?
Well, who can sleep with all this Tsoros? But I wanted to not overlook the connection. This is also the weekend of the anniversary of the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht.
You're kidding. It was this weekend that the Nazis burned the synagogues in Berlin?
Yes, sir, in Austria and Germany. And so basically it's a subliminal message to Israel, basically saying, I'll say it nicely, go jump in the lake.
Well, what's the mood in Israel today, Deborah? Obviously, the news has been out for the whole day. Have you heard people talking about it? What are they saying?
The American Jews are quite livid, but they don't put it past them. But it's still so bad that we're quite shocked.
Mm. Well, good luck. I don't know what else to say, and God bless you, and may God be with you. Let's pray that the Bible is not as predictive as we sometimes think it is, because if you look at the, I don't want to do the Bible preaching right now, but I can't help it, because I've seen passages in the Bible that are so frightening that predict nuclear war, and I've read them on the air. I don't want to read them now to scare people, but it talks about, I wish to God I could put my fingers on this now, but I've reached a point with my Old Testament in English where there are so many post-its, they're meaningless because they cover each other. It started with a few post-its 20 years ago. Now there's a post-it on every page, so there's no point to it. But I'm flipping through the post-its anyway, because there is a piece in the Old Testament where the Bible literally talks about the aftermath of a nuclear war in a way that's clear to anyone who knows what an aftermath of nuclear war looks like, which any educated American or, frankly, any individual who's ever watched the pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and what the people looked like where they had turned to ash, and they looked as though they were covered in ash, it is in the Bible, and I don't have it. I do see Isaiah where it says, "For though thy people, O Israel, be as the sand of the sea, only a remnant of them shall return," which was, of course, the creation of the State of Israel in 1947, and then Isaiah says, "And extermination is determined, overflowing with righteousness." I have no idea who he was predicting would be exterminated. I have no idea. "And they that harass Judah shall be cut off." And we don't know where this goes. "Therefore I'll make the heavens to tremble, and the earth shall be shaken out of her place, for the wrath of the Lord of hosts and for the day of his fierce anger." Now, there are many fundamentalist Christians who are listening to this program who believe the Bible is the Word of God and the truest Word of God and the truest words there are. And they understand that. And they believe that they will have the end of days, that we've been in them for a long time. Many of them believe that Obama ushered in the end of the end of days. I'm not in that camp, in that I'm a rationalist. I'm not that much of a religionist. But I often read the Bible somewhat as poetry, somewhat as out of historic interest. But sometimes I fall upon passages that shock me. And tonight could be one of them. Because if I read to you, which I may do at the end of the show tonight, after this quick break, the predictions of what could happen in the blink of an eye. We don't know what could happen. We don't know what Israel might do. We don't know what Israel might do now that they see the viper and the serpent and what the viper and the serpent have done to them. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
If you search the Bible, I found it. But first I want to read something before it from Joel, where he says, "And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see visions." I remember that one because I read that when I was very young. Would that make me a young man? Because I'm certainly not an old man dreaming dreams, am I? I feel like a young man who is prophesizing. Or am I a young man who is seeing visions? In either case, it's in the Bible, and it explains the behavior of age groups. Now, many times I've talked about the liberal statement of turn your swords into plowshares, and I've read it to you, correct? Did you know that in Joel, it is written, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears? Let the weak say, I am strong. Why did he say that? Because Joel said, proclaim this among the nations, prepare war. Stir up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. It is the opposite of the liberal gibberish that the churches have put into the minds of the weakling Christians in America who have turned the other cheek for so long, there are no longer any cheeks to turn. Remember that your Bible is based upon the Old Testament, which is anything but an anemic, pacifist document. Maybe it's time for you to find these passages for your feminized pastors. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Maybe they wouldn't need Prozac if they had a priest putting some fiber into their spines. But now let me get to where I'm going before the time is up tonight on the Savage Nation. It was found, the nuclear symptoms. Zechariah, is it prophecy, madness, or nothing? And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouths. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. And Judah also shall fight against Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the nations round about shall be gathered together. So there it is. That is the plague. All the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Read the Bible. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. And their eyes shall consume away in their sockets. And their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. Laugh if you will, Harvey. It's not a movie. It's not Charlton Heston's script as he goes out with the cue boards, Harvey. It's the real McCoy. And it was written by the greatest screenwriter the world has ever read. He's written a screenplay that the world has been reading for thousands of years, Harvey. It's something you can't find in the motels of Brentwood. No, my friends, it's the real McCoy. Am I calling for it? No, I'm just reading it to you. I'm just reading it to you. Little Israel's back is against the wall. And they don't have a duplicitous leader. They have a real leader. Someone whose brother sacrificed his life for their nation. Unlike what we have today in the highest of places. So as I close tonight in the Savage Nation in this hour, there's another hour coming up. But listen to Turn, Turn, Turn by the Byrds. It's directly from the Bible.
The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to hour number 3 on the Savage Nation for this Friday, the 8th already? Oh, God, TGIF. Hour number 3. Well, okay, so let's see. What's on michaelsavage.com? It's simple. Dad, don't pay any attention. What do I know? While you were sleeping and voting for Obama, they stabbed Israel in the back and were doing a deal with Iran. Iran, the world's number one terrorist nation, and they were stabbing Israel in the back. But why should you care? I'm Yisrael Chai, right? How could a Jew ever vote for Obama? What is wrong with liberal Jewish people? Are they crazy? Don't get me started. I'd rather stop right there than talk any more about it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. Well, of course you don't care. Right? What does Israel have to do with anything? Well, why should I care, actually? Why should I care about anything? Well, why do you care about anything? You don't. Do you care about anything? Chinese troops will have boots on the ground in Hawaii on Tuesday. That shouldn't bother you. They're there to help us in case there's a cyber attack. The friendly Chinese are going to help our military. I'm not making this up. I'm not inventing this. Tuesday through Thursday next week, first time in U.S. history, Obama has invited the Communist People's Republic of China's army onto American soil to help with humanitarian assistance and disaster. No, that's not what it's for. He's getting ready for something. So you may as well continue to enjoy your freedoms while you can. And I would also suggest that you protect your kidneys, because they may be your best bargaining chip. Maybe if they want two, you can offer them one. Maybe if they take one, they can take two noses. You know, buy a nose and get two kidneys free. I don't know. Anyway, it's all a joke, especially a joke to sarcastic liberals with their pretentious contempt, right? Yeah, it's a joke to you. You may as well have a joke, and you may as well laugh while the laughing is good. So I'll ask you, the audience. I realize it's very difficult to ask you anything on a Friday night. It's always an uphill battle. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Do you care? Is this of any interest to you or what? I'll repeat the story. Daily Beast. Long before a nuclear deal was in reach, the U.S. was lifting some of the financial pressure on Iran. A Daily Beast investigation reveals how the sanctions were softened. If we don't want to talk about that, what else is there to talk about? It's probably the biggest story of the week. As someone wrote, sounds like Obama decided to enter the Persian nuclear bazaar to haggle with the masters of negotiation. Does that interest you at all? Is that an interesting topic for talk radio? Or would you rather I talk about depression? Or how about a meatball recipe? This is a big story. I realize it didn't. All right, well, then we'll go on to hair lice. That's all. I'll do a story on hair lice. That might be of interest to the American political audience today. Is this what you get from drinking too much tea? Unless I say something about a tea party, you can't respond, because are you crazy? You realize how big this story is? Okay, here, I'll do a lice story then. More lenient school lice policies bug some parents. That's the benign headline. Did you hear what went on now? Parents are scratching their heads over less restrictive head lice policies that allow children with live bugs in their hair to return to the classroom. Do you know why they're doing that? And some school nurses are no longer sending home the dreaded lice note to other parents with kids in the classroom, alerting them to the possibility of lice in their own child's precious hair. Why? It's to prevent the children with lice in their hair from being embarrassed and to protect their privacy. I'm not making this up. We're living in the end days of insanity. America is in the final throes of psychosis under Obama. The policy shift is designed to help children not be embarrassed who have lice in their hair. So although it may result in the infection, the louse infection, spreading to other children, that's not as important as the self-esteem of the lousy children. Did you hear what I just said? Lousy children? You know where the word lousy person comes from? It's people who have lice in their hair. Now, I'll remind those of you who are ignoramuses out there, which would probably be in the 98th percentile of America, that lice can transmit many serious illnesses, infections rather, including typhus. But since lice have now become somewhat prevalent as a result of unchecked immigration from the third world, we don't want to upset you, because you certainly would rather, look, a good liberal would say, I'd rather my child come home with lice in her hair than embarrass an illegal alien. Now I'll tie that into the next story about illegal alien. Berkeley has banned the term illegal immigrant in its discourse because the phrase is racist, offensive, unfair, and derogatory. In a unanimous vote, the moronic student senators passed a resolution that stated the word illegal is racially charged, dehumanizes people, and contributes to punitive and discriminatory actions aimed primarily at immigrants and communities of color. Well, I suggest that we go along with the UC Berkeley student government and not use the words illegal immigrant. So we'll use the word illegal alien from now on, since that's a legalistic term that is absolutely correct. They're illegal and they're aliens. I'm a little down tonight. And I'm down for a number of reasons. It's not the weather. It's not the seasonal affective disorder. It's the fact that America has embraced socialism to an extent they never would have imagined. But this has been a war. A war unlike any I've ever seen, a social war. And the parallels to past times in history in other nations is overwhelmingly clear to those of us who know our history and do not want to repeat it. And those of you who do not know history and are going to repeat it, maybe you ought to spend a few minutes reading a little history. You see, whenever a dictator comes to power, or a dictatorship encircles the people, one of the things that the average person doesn't get is that the real power in the country and the real powerful business interests are never, ever the targets of the dictatorship in the beginning. They let them make a lot of money. They let them make more money, in fact, than they ever made before. They let them not pay taxes, like in the case of many corporations in this country who put Obama in power. They're paying zero taxes on U.S. earnings. Zero. So they're happy. They're getting what they want. Meanwhile, they tighten the noose on the middle class. Always the middle class is who they go after. They pander to the very rich and the very poor, and they squeeze the middle class. They squeeze and they squeeze and they squeeze. This entire Obamacare fight is going to come out of the hide of the middle class. The poor aren't going to pay for it. The rich who pay no taxes aren't going to pay for it. It's the guy who owns a small business who's going to pay $20,000 a year more for medical, for health care, who's going to support the sex change operations, who's going to support the illegal aliens, who's going to support the diabetic who refuses to stop eating sugar, who won't take care of herself so she can go to an Indian gambling casino and throw her welfare check into a machine with a diabetes arm shaking and a cigarette in her mouth. What do you think? This is all fiction? It's not fiction. Just go there and take a look who's in a gambling casino while you're working your behind off. And you'll understand why socialist dictatorships have always targeted the middle class. Because the middle class is too busy to fight back. They're working. They don't have the time to go march in the street and scream and yell. They just work hard and they pay. They don't know what. So then along comes the Tea Party, which is basically from the middle class, from the taxpayer, from the worker, from the business owner, and says enough is enough. And now what happens is they unleash hell itself upon them. They smear them. The unions attack them. The Congressional Black Caucus smears them. It calls them racist. The union says, let's take them out. The media, in a relentless campaign, smears the Tea Party, who is basically the taxpayer in this country, until eventually the average person doesn't know what's true or false. I think it was Goebbels who said, if you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. And so, one day after the other, Axelrod gives the instructions to the networks and to his cohorts through Twitter of what the marching orders are. And every day, like a drip, 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 they poison the political mind of the country, where the criminals are made into patriots and the patriots are made into criminals. And at the same time, the middle class is squeezed and squeezed for every dime until it can take no more, and then they squeeze some more. Years ago, I wrote a book called The Enemy Within. It's one of my earlier books, not my first by any means. It was published in 2003, can you believe it? And this book was entitled Michael Savage, The Enemy Within, Saving America from the Liberal Assault on Our Schools, Faith, and Military. Oh, yeah, I was wrong. But I dedicated the book with a quote from someone who you may remember because it's been picked up. And the quote went like this. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. Marcus Tullius Cicero, Roman orator and statesman, 42 B.C. And the rhetoric I heard coming from de Blasio was exactly that, appealing to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He kept talking about how there was inequality in New York City as though it was stolen from the poor, when the poor, in fact, don't work at all. It wasn't stolen from the poor. It was people who worked for it. But he, of course, is using class warfare the way his boss Obama used class warfare, the way their cousin Castro used class warfare, the way their friend Chavez used class warfare, the way their grandfather Marx used class warfare, the way their other grandfather Lenin used class warfare to get where they want to go. And how did that work out for Russia? How did class warfare work out for Russia? And how did class warfare work out for the people of Cuba? And how is class warfare working out for the American people? But I'm asking you a question. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Now, I know many liberals in America, in fact, even Jewish liberals will say, I feel good about them stabbing Israel in the back. I like it. Jewish liberals across America are probably cheering that Israel got stabbed in the back because they support Obama and Kerry and the Democrats to a 90th percentile. They hate the Tea Party, which supports Israel. So I would think the Jewish liberals are celebrating tonight in synagogues across America that Obama and Kerry stabbed Israel in the back going back to June. They certainly haven't changed their politics. The synagogues haven't changed their position, which is anything Obama does is good because he is God. So I'll ask you again. I'll ask you until you finally answer because I'm not stopping. How do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? Because that's what he did. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Iran gets everything that it wanted in this stage, and it pays nothing. And this is when Iran is under severe pressure. I urge Secretary Kerry not to rush to sign, to wait, to reconsider, to
okay,
get
let's
a good...
pause right there. The question to the audience is, one, what do Hassan Rouhani and Barack Hussein share in common? What do Hassan Rouhani and Barack Hussein share in common? And how do you feel about Obama stabbing Israel in the back? I mean, it's a simple question. You don't think this is an important question? I don't think you understand. Someone wrote on the articles on the bottom, I love blog comments. They're like callers, but they write them. And one wrote, Obama is one of two things. One, the most completely incompetent, naive, gullible, dangerously foolish president to ever hold office, including Jimmy Carter. Or, two, the most cunning, duplicitous, Marxist, manipulating, anti-American usurper to lie, cheat, and steal his way into the White House. Which is he? Then he writes, does it matter? In this case, I don't think it matters. It's that simple. It's beyond belief. He's not negotiating with these folks from Iran. They have gotten what they wanted. They're going to get a nuclear weapon. And then what are we going to do? So Israel has to make a decision. Either they've been crying wolf and saying, you know, one more step and I'll fight with you. One more step and I'll fight with you. And then the steps, they get being pushed to the wall now. Either they're going to do their own thing or they're not going to do it. I don't see how they can do it on their own. I don't see how they can bomb Iran. And what's that going to yield? Now, if it was only Israel saying this, many of you will say, good, I'm glad. Who's Israel to push us around? And why should the tail wag the dog? But I'll remind you that Saudi Arabia is equally incensed by Kerry and Obama signing a secret deal with Iran, just so you get the big picture, okay? Just so you don't think it's only Israel. That would be bad enough, but you could say, all right, who cares about Israel? I'm sick of them. They're a bunch of greedy, pushy people who I don't care about. I'm sick of the dog, the tail wagging the dog. Let them screw themselves already. Many people feel that way, by the way, about Israel, except for the Christian conservative movement in America, which has been marginalized by this communist regime. But I will remind you that Saudi Arabia is also anguished over this. So who is Obama answering to by doing the secret deal with Iran is the question. This is only one man's opinion. You can dismiss it if you wish. After all, who am I to make an opinion? Who am I to have an opinion when I'm just a talk show host? Now, of course, I began the week by warning you not to take the flu vaccine. And although it was posted on Drudge for me, it was a year ago. It got 900,000 hits or a million hits. I don't know how many. And why believe me? What are you listening to him for? Go to your local doctor, your AMA doctor. He knows everything. Ask the doctor. He knows. Well, strange, a story came out today that said a Johns Hopkins scientist slams the flu vaccine. And where was it published? Wait a minute. Savage said it on Monday. It can't be true. A Johns Hopkins scientist has issued a blistering report on influenza vaccines in a British medical journal. Wow. The BMJ confirms what Savage said, and I'm only a talk show host, merely with an epidemiology and human nutrition PhD from the University of California, and I was right? How could that be? He's a conservative. He's a right-winger. What does he know? Who knows what he knows? But the big topic is not the flu vaccine. If you want the vaccine, and you know what I think you should do if you're a liberal? Get two flu vaccines. Get two. Take one, get one free. Take an extra one for me. Do me a favor. If every Democrat in America took two flu vaccine shots, we might actually have a sane nation at the end of the year. I won't finish why, but you can figure that one out. No, they're so safe, take two of them. In fact, take three of them. Because I'm wrong about everything, you should take three flu vaccine shots if you're a Democrat. And conservatives shouldn't take one. Now, there's another story today that he fired two admirals now. It came out tonight in the Washington Post at the last minute. He fired two more. The man is purging the military of everyone who might stand up to him. Two U.S. admirals, including the director of naval intelligence, were dismissed tonight. Placed on leave Friday night, and their access to classified material was suspended. Again, obviously on trumped-up charges by the master of the purge. The greatest purge since Joseph Stalin did it is going on right in front of your nose, but because we have a gelded press, look it up. It's another word that you may not have heard of, like mulk the public.
Savage.
You know, all you hear is Obamacare, Obamacare, Obamacare. You think there's no other news, right? Well, you're wrong. Joining us now in the Savage Nation is Jennifer Harper of the Washington Times to tell us about the other stories that's been keeping her busy. Jennifer Harper, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
It's always good to be with you, Michael.
Jennifer, you know I'm tired of hearing about Obamacare all day long. I don't talk about it. You say there's a poll out there that says I'm not the only one? Wow.
Well, this is a visceral side of Obamacare. How about that? We've heard over and over again that the young and the healthy are the people who are going to be footing most of the bill for Obamacare, paying for everyone else, paying for that national health care. But when push comes to shove, you got to wonder, do the young and healthy realize what's happening here? Well, here's the deal. They're not paying attention to Obamacare at all. And this is coming, my gosh, from a poll. This is coming from news. And this is coming from numbers. There is a Pew Research Center a survey that asked people under the age of 30, hey, are you paying attention to news about Obamacare? Well, guess what, Michael? They discovered that only 15% of people under 30, I repeat, 15%, are actually paying attention to press coverage about the health care law. That is not very much, because these are people that need to know what's happening, need to be informed, but they're like, hey, wake me when it's over. They can't pay attention to it. And, you know, alternatively, this survey also asked people over 50 and over 65, are you paying attention to the health care? Well, by gosh, of course they are. Between 42 and 50% of that age group are closely following all the news coverage. And back again to our kids under 30, 15% are paying attention.
Is the world watching about what happens with Obamacare? Do they care?
Well, let's talk about this. The Global Language Monitor is a research group. They are United States-based, and what they do is analyze the frequencies of certain topics in the news. They go to 275,000 news sources around the world. That's a lot. They use computer-aided tracking to find out what are people really talking about. What they found out was that the word of the year, the most frequently cited word of the year, is 404. Now, anybody who has a computer knows that 404 is the universal symbol for online failure. And this group is saying 404 is the near universal numeric code for failure on the global internet, augmenting its original use as page not found. The recent Obamacare launch debacle in the U.S. is only a representative example of a much wider system fail. And what is happening here, Michael, is that the world is paying attention to what's going on here with rolling out Obamacare before its time. So 404 is now the word of the year, according to these folks, and 275,000 news sources. If you're curious, in second place is the word fail. That is the single word usually used with an exclamation point to signify a failure of an effort. And in third place is hashtag. Everybody knows what that is on Twitter. But going back to 404, Michael, the world is paying attention to what we're doing or not doing over here.
You reported that there's a group of Hollywood idiots banding together to get a senator out of office. Who are they?
Well, this is kind of a precursor to what's to come. Everyone is always wondering, what is Hollywood doing when it comes to our election? And perhaps more than ever, Hollywood is politically involved, politically inclined. And here is just a small case scenario of what's to come. The big shots out in Hollywood have decided, at least one of them, has decided that it is time for Senator Mitch McConnell to be unseated from his long time perch as a senator from Kentucky. And the word has gone out in Hollywood that it is time to support the very young woman who is going up against Mr. McConnell. She is only 34 years old, and she is suddenly got the support of 60, I repeat, 60 of the top Hollywood actors. We're talking, you know, the A-listers like Jerry Seinfeld, Ben Affleck, all of those folks who have decided to band together to help defeat Mitch McConnell against Alison Lindergan Grimes. That is the name of the young woman who was challenging him. And it's interesting to note that Mitch McConnell's campaign folks are already striking back. Again, an indicator of what to call, what's to come in 2014. So brace for all of this, everybody. They're saying that the last people in the world that know anything about Kentucky values are those out in Hollywood, and I think they've got a good point. So the message is Hollywood's already politically engaged, and so is the money, because already this young woman has $2.5 million in her campaign treasure chest.
Now, drones. Drones are us. Drones have been in the news lately, and you say they're being used by PETA?
Well, I think one of the most either heinous or hilarious use of drones is through the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. They are now selling special drones that are meant to kind of cast surveillance on hunters and fishermen. They want to see if the hunters and fishermen are being cruel to animals or drinking or all kinds of things like that. And this has been, this got on the public radar about a month or so ago when the PETA folks began offering these little drones in their gift catalog. How about that? Well, you know, hunters and fishermen, I guess, are innovative people. They've already have something available to them, and this is called the Drone Shield. Here is a product description of the new Drone Shield. You can put it in your lexicon if you like, Michael. It's called a low-cost, easy-to-use device that detects the presence of nearby drones and issues alerts via email or a flashing light. This is coming from the manufacturer. The goal is to help preserve privacy from low-cost, remote-control air vehicles with video cameras. And the company is also offering a camouflage version for hunters, and they're pretty reasonably priced for all this, $59. That's so the hunters can and fishermen can be in the woods at peace, I guess. But that's kind of what's on the drone radar now, Michael.
The FDA is trying to make the U.S. healthier by banning trans fat, which I agree with, by the way. But you say there is some resistance to this?
Yeah, well, a lot of people consider this to be an invasion on their comfort food. I have to wonder about that. I mean, yeah, the government has a good point about trans fats. Absolutely. All over the place. It's in all the things we love to eat. Pizza, microwave popcorn, bakery delights, all that kind of stuff. And already there's one of these polls out there that's asking Americans, well, how do you feel about this FDA ban on trans fats? And believe it or not, the majority of Americans are opposing the FDA restrictions on the use of trans fats. But there's a partisan divide. Apparently some of us like our trans fats and our comfort foods better than others. The number is 60% among Republicans and 71% among the Tea Partiers. And I guess the Democrats are a little more fastidious because 52% actually approve of the measure. So if there's a partisan divide, you can find it just about anywhere in America. I guess this is all coming from a Pew Research for the People in a Press poll that was issued on Thursday.
What is this new book you're talking about, Jennifer?
Yeah, there's a book out that's wondering the big question. When did white trash become the new normal? Aha, You say, when did white trash become the new normal? This is a book by Charlotte Hayes. She is director of cultural programming for the Independent Women's Forum, and she describes herself as a Southern woman asking a impertinent question, but she's wondering why America has become hopelessly tacky. Gosh, we've got reality TV, endless celebrity gossip, baby daddies, tattoos, trailer parks, all that kind of stuff. And she says that it's actually evolving. She says old white trash meant you had a shotgun wedding, while new white trash means that you get a designer bridal gown that's built to enhance your pregnancy. How about that? She points out that Thomas Jefferson once wrote, it is in the manners and the spirit of a people which preserve a republic in vigor. And the author also points out that it was Honey Boo Boo, the little TV tot on reality TV, who said, I wish I had an extra finger, then I could grab more cheese balls. in the end, I actually asked the author, are you worried for America? She says, yeah, I'm worried, but it doesn't have to be that way. She quotes her own grandfather, who once had a schoolmaster who said, you can't all be scholars, but you can all be gentlemen. So the author is suggesting that the only way we will slay the beast of white trash as normal is to recover the sense that character, including manners, is just as important as anything we can achieve. And she says, the good news is that just about anybody can do that.
Jennifer, where can people read more of your work?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Harper Bulletin, and I'm always at WashingtonTimes.com, inside the Beltway and the Water Cooler blog. Thanks for that.
Jennifer Harper, thanks again for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It's always my pleasure, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
It is Friday night with Michael Savage. What a wonderful world we're living in. A psychopath in the White House, a commie psychopath in the mayorship in New York. What could be better? The reason we're sticking to a sort of nautical theme tonight with a little Somewhere Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin is because we have the hero, John Kerry, as you remember, the hero on the Swift boat, who just gave Netanyahu a swift kick in the heart. Probably didn't make it to your local newspaper. I wouldn't expect the New York Daily News or the New York Post or, God forbid, the New York Times to report this. But it was reported today, it's at the top of Drudge all day in world news from the Daily Beast, that the Obama administration stabbed Israel in the back, that the sanctions on Iran were softened in June, even before the current round of nuclear talks in Geneva began. They've already yielded. So they've entered a game of chess, and they've already lost five rounds before they started. Did they lose, or did they do what Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran, wanted? What did I just say? Valerie Jarrett, his most trusted advisor, is Iranian? You betcha. You betcha. Now, of course, that wouldn't color her any more than someone born in Israel working in Chicago would color his views in any way. But apparently, Kerry is working overtime to not only stab Israel in the back, the knife's already in the back of Netanyahu, but to twist the knife now. Look, it's a Friday night, and most people are into the weekend modality already. I don't know what they're doing, but the fact of the matter is the duplicitousness of Barack Obama and John Kerry has reached a new level of a new height, let's put it that way, without making it bigger than it is. They stabbed Israel in the back. It came out today that as of June, they're already giving in on sanctions to the mullahs in Iran without telling anybody. So it leaves Israel in a crazy place. I'll go on now. Israel's the big story to me. Do we have any sound of John Kerry? Of course we do. Let's go to clip number one on the Savage Nation.
The P5 is doing some very important work right now, and I'm delighted to be here at the invitation of Kathy Ashton to try to work with our colleagues to see if we can narrow some differences. I want to emphasize there are still some very important issues on the table that are unresolved.
Now, no one knows what P5 is, and no one knows who Kathy Ashton is. This shows you how disconnected John Kerry is from reality, from the real world. No one knows who the P5 is. I never heard of it. I don't know who Kathy Ashton is. Does she own a clothing line? What is he talking about? He's talking about basically cutting Israel's throat now that he stabbed him in the back. What do you mean he's working with your colleagues? You have colleagues in Iran that we don't know about? Who are they? Colleagues of Valerie Jarrett? So do you know what I'm talking about? Well, listen to clip two.
I want to emphasize there is not an agreement at this point in time, but the P5 is working hard. And I look forward to the meetings that I will be having very shortly with Lady Kathy Ashton and with my fellow ministers in the P5, and then also I will be meeting with Minister Zarif.
Minister Zarif, the Minister of Death. And I still don't know what the P5 is, and I don't know who Lady Kathy Ashton is, nor do I give a rat's. I don't give a lice. A Berkeley louse doesn't interest me. A louse in the hair of a student in Berkeley interests me more than someone by the name of Lady Kathy Ashton. When I hear the name Lady Kathy Ashton, I get nauseated. Now, this meeting is, of course, very great importance to us because it means that not since Jimmy Peanut Carter did what he did back in the days of the disaster of the Peanut administration have we seen anything with such deadly incompetence. Israel may reject it all at once, but Iran is the big winner here. Obama has thrown in with the Iranians. He has basically eased sanctions, even though, of course, he's lying through Kerry and saying that we haven't really lifted the sanctions. It came out today in the Daily Beast that as of June, they were already lifting sanctions against Iran, which were the only things that kept Iran somewhat in line, and now it's over. A review of Treasury Department notices reveals that the U.S. government has all but stopped the financial blacklisting of entities and people that help Iran evade international sanctions since the election of its president Hassan Rouhani in June. What's interesting to me is there's a TV show called Homeland, which is so remarkable in so many ways, and it's about a U.S. congressman who really is an agent of Al-Qaeda. It's also about, the current episode is about a banker who is on the side of Iran running their money laundering, and what he will do in his duplicitous ways to make certain that Iran continues to evade the sanctions. But now we have no need for such shows, do we? There's an open love affair with Iran under Obama. And the left is probably cheering that Valerie Jarrett's White House was secretly negotiating with Iran behind the back of not only Israel, but behind the back of our own Congress. A Daily Beast investigation was reported today that the U.S. was lifting financial pressure on Iran going back to June, and in return getting nothing. So this is your Kerry, this is your Obama. The question tonight is, well, there are many questions, mainly how do you feel about Obama and Kerry stabbing Israel in the back. But, you know, there's another way to look at this, and many people probably look at it that way. They're so tired at the end of the day, struggling with their own personal demons, their own personal lives, their finances, their children, their parents, their mother, their father, existence itself, that they could care less about Israel. Israel is now so far removed from the psyche of most Americans. It's not what it was 20 or 30 years ago. Why? There's a number of reasons. One, we have a more narcissistic, not president, that's a given. We have a more self-centered electorate in America than any in history. The baby boomer generation could care less about Israel. They care about health care, free prescription drugs, and Viagra. That's what they care about. They're focused not on the pebble in the shoe, but on something else. As the great Roman historian said, the average Roman in his time didn't care about where the legions were, whether they were winning or losing. They cared about the pebble in the shoe. And today, the average senior liberal in particular cares only about not the pebble in his shoe, but the Viagra in his medicine cabinet. And so although that sounds clever, the question is, where do we go with this cat and mouse game now? Is Israel really going to disappear if Iran gets a nuclear weapon? That's one question. But the bigger issue really is, and this is what most Americans would say, how can we do anything about it? We don't have the military. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the money to be the world's policeman anymore. So really, you're acting as if it's America of 40 years ago when it isn't. We've lost our edge. We've lost it. Obama has decimated the military. He fired two more admirals tonight. He's cut out the combat leadership in the military. He has feminized the military. So where's the military that could do anything about this, even if we had a president who wanted to do it right now? He has gutted the military. Everybody knows that, who knows what's going on inside the military. But put that aside. Where is this supposed to come from? Do we have the money to be the world's policeman? And should we be the world's policeman? Well, some would say yes. Others would say no.
Savage.